You are about to enjoy a presentation recorded at the 2023 Michigan Conference Camp Meeting held at Cedar Lake, Michigan. We pray that the Lord will bless you as you listen.
Dear Father in Heaven, I just want to lift up each of these precious people and ask that you be close to them as they take what they have learned, build upon it, use it in Grand Rapids or Lansing, or start just with their neighbors and friends or one other person in the church. I pray you give them wisdom on using the right arm of the gospel, hydrotherapy, but other things as well. And we thank you so much for your blessings and your promises and for your promise of coming soon. And we pray this in your precious and holy name. Amen.
Amen.
All right, let us move into today, a little bit of a summary. I'll have quiet down and get out your pens and pencils because I want to leave you with something very important. So revelation-based medicine, we've been looking through the lens of the Bible and spirit of prophecy. How can I serve God through my body the best? Will this help me draw closer to God or not? Understanding the cause of disease. So Monday, we looked at, is this natural remedy helping me get closer to God, experience the gospel deeply, or if I'm helping someone else, illustrate the gospel? We looked at metabolic diseases specifically, and whole foods plant-based diet is primarily how you reverse that. Go to one of these Renove or one of these Life, startanew.me if you want to learn more details about that. Or the handout. Tuesday, we looked at the cause. Is this natural remedy actually addressing the cause and causing the least harm as possible? What about respiratory illnesses? Again, whole foods, plant-based diet, helping prevent. But also we looked at a number of different hydrotherapy modalities that you can do at home. I would encourage you, the hydrotherapy that I went over in class this week itself is things you can do yourself. I'd encourage you to practice it a number of times, get some training before you do it on somebody else that you know you don't know. From Wednesday, we looked at the origin of different modalities. Is it safe? Some of these things have satanic origin. The latent powers of the mind, activating that when we actually need to be looking at Christ. It's nothing about me that can actually change anything, it's Christ. And so anything that talks about like the universal energy, anything like that, be very leery of. And we looked at these specific modalities that come and cannot be separated from their origin. Some things, like herbs and things like that, God created, and they've just been, their use has been perverted. So we can separate that from the perverted use and use them appropriately. Some we cannot. all right, that is Wednesday. And we looked at chronic pain and stopping or preventing or decreasing the inflammation that is driving that pain spasm, pain cycle. And looked at, again, whole foods, plant-based diet, put some very specific things in that handout there. There's a lot of other details in regards to chronic pain. A lot of the autoimmune diseases overlap with each other, and some of them don't, some of them do. So I would work with a lifestyle medicine physician, if some of the initial dietary changes are not working. All right, Thursday. Turn to the person next to you and ask them a review from Thursday. How do you use natural remedies in a place with abundant resources like the U.S. and in places without? Like we're talking about the context of natural remedies. How do you decide based off of the resources at hand? How does that influence your decision? And then secondly, how could many people improve or potentially stop their headaches or their sleep problems? I'm going to take a few moments to review with the person next to you. Let's come back together now. And what's the first question? What are your guys' thoughts? How do you use natural remedies in a place with abundant resources and in places without? What are you guys' thoughts? What were your thoughts from yesterday? What are you guys' thoughts? Probably something you never thought about before. Yeah.
Start with diet.
Start with diet. That's, yeah, you can't go wrong there, right? I was talking to somebody yesterday that doesn't even have a cause yet. They don't know what's causing their particular condition. And hey, this can be at least a catalyst to be healthier, for sure. And you use what's at hand. Use what's around you. That food we all have to eat. So start with what you know. Yeah. Yeah, and we want to look at the research on regards to everything for sure. So in the context, how do we use natural remedies? We looked at the story of the people in Nazareth who weren't able to be healed because they didn't have faith. They had a huge resource, Christ, right there. But they didn't take it. The rich young ruler. How many times do we not take advantage of the things right around us? There's many herbs, like, she's mentioning, that are right around us that, have very good research behind them, and we can look at those and use those for sure. And then with headaches and insomnia, and trace that. Use the diary to trace that to the cause. We looked at quite a number of causes. And a lack of the dehydration, the sleep, any of those and there's certain foods that may trigger a migraine for you, and you can take a look at those in the handout. Sleep hygiene. How many times having a schedule, getting to bed on time, having a morning routine as well. I find for most people a morning routine is probably more important. Get your morning exercise, get your light in the morning, so on, and dark at night, cool in your bedroom, fresh air, all those types of things. There are a lot of other details in the handouts we don't have quite time to go through. So again, this is not a comprehensive class on these different diseases or a comprehensive natural remedies. This is more a class on how do I view natural remedies? How do I pick a natural remedy through the lens of the Bible and spirit of prophecy? And I just hit kind of the highlights of the big major things that had the most research, the most effective. I did not get into any of the nitty gritty that maybe have preclinical trials. A number of you have asked me about some other things that, it probably works with physiology. It probably is good. There's not a lot of side effects, so it, might be worth a try. But use what has the most research and is the best and is closest at hand first, not the thing that has all the advertisement and all of the salesmen around it, right? Because they're probably, not all of them have your best interest in mind, right? Okay, so how do you make, let's go through this and review this one more time. So Monday we looked at the faith test. Does it engage the will? A supplement doesn't necessarily, or a pill does not engage the will. Working with your diet definitely engages the willpower and combines faith and works, which means you have a closer walk with God. And also you need to preserve life. So there is a place for medications, a place for different interventions in some cases. You have to work with your healthcare, provider on that. If you are high risk for a major complication, you need to preserve life. There's a whole bunch of spirit of prophecy quotes in the handout from Monday. It's called The Biblical Approach, and that goes through this life and health principle. There's no reason why you can't take a medication to preserve your life so you're alive. So you can work towards better health and take advantage of the natural remedies. Because you can't work towards health if you're dead.
Right.
Just saying. Tuesday, does it work? Does the natural remedy work with your body? Address the cause of disease with living minimal effects, meaning minimal effects. And sometimes we looked at, sometimes you have to take something that does have effects on your body. I mean, many times I'm, in the hospital and I'm trying to keep the heart alive and I have to be a little harder on the kidneys, unfortunately. But, the heart is more important. At that moment in time. And once I get past that critical moment with that person, then I can pray with them and thank God that God got them past that critical moment and share with them these things that they work towards better health and work towards the cause of disease. We looked at the simpler, the better, of the effective treatments. You want to go for the simplest thing first of the effective treatments. All right, Wednesday, we looked at origins. We want to reject it if its foundation is falsehood, and careful if it's a perversion of what God originally provided. Thursday, today, we are looking at, or sorry, yesterday, in faith, we use the best that we have available. Oh, sure. And all of this is in your handout as well. All of this exact same wording. I was better today. All right. So let's review briefly. How do we put this all together? It's not a cookie cutter, right? Every one of us, every one of our situations, our context is different. So we'd pray much. I printed this these questions out on just one sheet of paper. Obviously, there's the big document that has all the spirit of prophecy, not all the spirit of prophecy, but some of the selected spirit of prophecy quotes to back this up. But this is something that you can fill out, make a pro and con sheet, gather all the information about something that you're looking at, and pray for divine aid. One rule, like this says in child guidance, one rule cannot be followed in every case. So we shouldn't judge someone else for how they're choosing to treat their healthcare issue, because we don't know all of the details of their situation. We can just support them through that. So ask yourself, what's the best thing that could happen if you use this? What's the worst thing that could happen if you use this? What about, what's the worst thing that could happen if you don't? You know, just like, oh, I'm just going to throw out all these medications and supplements. I'm just going to do nothing. This is just too overwhelming. Well, that's not very smart. You're not going to get better that way. Sometimes you have to just make a decision and do the best you can. I remember trying to, you know, when COVID was first starting and we didn't know a lot of different things and research was just coming out in the early stages, but I have to advise patients right away. I can't wait. Oh, like come back in 5 years when we have all the research figured out about all these different things. No. You have to make a decision sometimes right now with the information that you have. And some of the higher risk, you know, people that were higher risk for COVID, you know, looking at some of the different things that were coming out and weighing the pros and cons with them, and saying, hey, this is what I know. What would be the worst case if we did went this route? What would be the worst case if we didn't? In some cases we decided to do, you know, one way, in other cases we decided to do another way. And I believe when we do that in faith, when we take all of the resources, conventional medicine, you know, the best of the natural remedies, all of those types of things, and weigh the odds in a specific situation, I believe God blesses that. He, you know, and so many stories. We were doing a study conference 2 weekends ago, and how many stories of where people in faith decided to, we were reading Abinus history, and they would decide to, you know, they made their best decision. Okay, we're going to do this. We're going to build this sanitarium. We're going to do this. And God came in and said, no, we're not going to do that. Like, he will correct. When you do something in faith, you do the best you can, you start moving forward, he will open and close doors and bless in ways that he couldn't if you just sat there and did nothing. We need to take advantage of what God has given us and use our brains. So for example, this was the quote that I was mentioning yesterday. Sixth volume of the Testament, page 24. It is the very essence of all right faith to do the right thing at the right time. Quick story from S.N. Haskell, which was one of our Adventist pioneers who started company evangelism and so on and so forth. This was before the 1863 health reform vision. He was very adamant about not eating pork. Would that be a good thing to advocate for? Yeah. I mean, pork is probably the worst thing you could eat, right? Very, very interesting. I put this really small in case you want to take a picture of it. I'm not going to read it. This is something Ellen White wrote to S.N. Haskell, saying, don't make such a big deal out of the pork question. Now is not the right time for our people to be having to make a decision on this. What? Isn't that insane? It's an unclean meat. Like, she wasn't saying you're wrong. Like, you know, pork is a good... No, she wasn't saying that. She's saying, you're right. But the people aren't ready for it. The people aren't ready for it. Sometimes the people that you're working with, your neighbors and friends, we should not, like we, the quote we read earlier this week, we should not make a raid upon their health habits. Sometimes they're not, that's the verbiage that she used, not make a raid upon their health habits. Yeah, are their health habits need some help? For sure. But maybe they're not ready for it yet. Maybe other church members aren't ready for what you awesome things that you experienced at camp meeting. To be patient, and we need to be kind and not judge what another person does, especially when there's not a lot of information out. Sometimes it's best to just keep silent until there's more information and just do the best that we can with what we know. So very fascinating story. Obviously, she had the 1863 message, and God was like, yep, now is the right time to then be sharing the health message with the Adventist people as a whole. Wouldn't that help a lot of church board meetings if we just were all patient with each other and kind? Sometimes the context of what we need to deal, sometimes the context also has to do with who we are around. We should take into consideration those around us. Some decisions regarding our health do affect others, and Romans 15:1 is helpful. We then who are strong ought to bear the scruples of the weak and not to please ourselves. Sometimes when we don't have a lot of information about things, we just need to do the best we can for ourselves and for those around us, and not make a big deal about it until we have more information. All right, so that's the context, a little bit of a review. So how do we then apply the natural remedies to the work of medical missionary work, of helping others? This is the quote that I was reading earlier, and we're not to make a raid upon people's habits and practices. This is striking too directly at the gods they worship. Instead, we are to offer them something better, that we may give people a practical demonstration of the principles we advocate. Going to someone's house and cooking with them. Like, oh, let me share something, you know, some of my favorite stuff with you, and not telling them, you know, how terrible their stuff is. That's okay. You know, how long, I know, I think we first switched from real milk to soy milk for a while. And then when I first became vegan, I was like thinking, it's like, oh yeah, it would be smart to, you know, to be vegan, and so I'm gonna eat potato chips instead of Doritos. Right. So all of us on our journey, and we need to take time to listen where people are at in their journey and encourage them where they're at. Look at what they're doing well instead of focusing on the negative, because that will help them move forward with the positive, right? If we focus on the positive, it will encourage more positive. If we focus on the negative, it will encourage more negative, and also probably not have a friendship with anymore. All right, so the Savior made each work of healing an occasion for implanting a divine principle or divine principles in the mind and soul. So he used the confidence he gained with people in healing them and their increased faith through that healing process to implant a divine principle, that they're learning something from that experience. Divine principle could mean decluttering your house, right? How many of you gone to that seminar? What about your finances? These are all divine principles, and you have to find out where their felt need is. Where is their biggest need? And implant a divine principle in that area, and it will help move them closer towards the gospel and incline their hearts to receive the gospel of his grace. All right, so the last half of what we're going to do is mental health. So, unfortunately, it said in the seminar description that Pastor Phil, who's doing his master's in psychology, would be joining me. I would have loved to have him join. He would have loved to have been here. He cannot. So I'm switching gears a little bit. I find it very, very helpful. I am not covering directly. I'm covering the stuff, the foundational lifestyle principles that can help depression and anxiety, but I'm not covering like depression and anxiety directly. That's way longer than it would take. It would take way longer than 30 minutes. Dr. Neil Nedley, definitely would be the expert to go to for much more detailed work with him. Both Nathan and myself have worked with him, and we definitely have found his programs very useful as we're starting to do them in Lansing. So that's the website there for more information. There's online programs. There's a lot of different resources there. So I'd encourage you to go that direction. So he has the hit hypothesis. So meaning that there are 10 different hits, categories of hits to the brain. Once you get to 4 hits to the brain, kind of 4 insults to the brain, your brain doesn't have what it needs in order to function properly, and you may start experiencing a lot more stress, depression, anxiety, so on and so forth. Even once you get up to, 3, you might start feeling more stressed. So those are listed on page 3 of your handout, the different hits to the brain. So we see the developmental, so childhood trauma, and et cetera. Genetic, we test for that in the residential depression and anxiety recovery programs. But then all of the rest of these are ones that you can do something about. That's encouraging. That is very encouraging that you can actually decrease the number of hits that your brain has. So it can have again what it needs to function. Every program that I've worked with, either with out in California or there in Lansing, has just been incredible improvement. It's apply these principles and they work. And sometimes you need to go to a program to have that support around you. If you have actual diagnosis of depression, anxiety, you can see the symptoms up there. But if you're just having a lot of stress, think through these hits and say, okay, where is my brain struggling? Does my brain have what it needs? We are going to focus more on the nutrition and frontal lobe aspects. We've already gone over the sleep-wake cycle. Nathan's done a whole class on exercise and the medical. We've gone through some of those. The metabolic diseases is very inflammatory and definitely predisposes you to depression and anxiety. So review that handout from Monday. All right. So sugar. We're talking about sugar and mental health. So we're doing great in America. We have decreased our sugar consumption since 2001. You can see that. So now we're only consuming 72.7 pounds per person per year. Aren't we excited? So that is equivalent to 10 gallons of sugar. Like per person per year. That's insanity.
Somebody's eating my sugar.
Good for you. Somebody else is eating her sugar. That's what she says. So 10 gallons. So that's a lot of soda. That's a lot of these high fructose corn syrup. So what happens when we have these high sugar, a very processed, the ice cream, you can see a number of the pictures there, and they hide it in these sweet and sour things too.
Yes.
So like ketchup and those types of things. A lot of the processed stuff will have high fructose corn syrup, which is probably the most dangerous type, particularly for diabetes. Anyway, we could go on for that. But see what happens is when you have a big sugar load, it's just straight sugar. It's glucose. It's like ready to go straight into your cell. But wait, it's in your gut. It has to be absorbed, and then it has to connect with insulin, get in bloodstream, and then hit a receptor on your cell and get inside. So you have like 100 molecules of glucose, and like calls up your pancreas, chemically of course, and says, hey, we got like 100 molecules. Hey, you send like 100 FedEx trucks to deliver these packages like this second? And your pancreas is like, oh, I'm freaking out, right? In hydrotherapy, we had some double bookings and stuff, and poor Tara is like, all these people flooding in. Wouldn't it be so much nicer if it was the bottom line here, where it's like, all the fresh vegetables and beans and things like that, that's paired with fiber. And so your body has to absorb it and digest it and like, okay, we're gonna release some glucose molecules here very slowly. And so your body calls up the pancreas and says, okay, you know, we got one molecule of glucose coming every minute. Can you, you know, send a truck every minute? Okay, yeah, we can handle that, you know. And so then the FedEx trucks would be like insulin that pick up glucose and take it to the cell. So that obviously has implications for diabetes. More fiber is helpful for diabetes, but what about for brain health? This is very difficult on the brain to have a big spike. You feel a bit of a serotonin rush because, yeah, it helps to kind of push the serotonin pathway. And so you feel the serotonin rush, but then you have this drop afterwards because the sugar is absorbed quickly, particularly if you're not diabetic, right? Then your pancreas can handle that and tuck it away quickly. So now your sugar is dropping. You know, your body just got really stimulated. Oh man, we're having lots of sugar load. Are we going to continue having lots of sugar load? And so you're going to drop really, really quickly, and you're going to feel that lull, that gloom afterwards. And that's very challenging for the brain. And guess what you want? More sugar, especially if you're stressed, right? And you feel like the fix is more food and more sugar, when actually that's the problem. And it becomes an addiction. We already talked about high fructose corn syrup. So what is actually have more calories than these simple carbs or these sugars that we're talking about? So protein has 4, carbs has 4, alcohol has 7, which is an empty calorie. And then fat has 9. So that is very difficult for diabetes, but it's also very difficult on the brain as well, particularly the saturated fats that we talked about on Monday. And the trans fat is, you know, obviously out of the question for the brain. Your brain is actually mostly fat. So you need healthy fats for your good brain function. Won't be able to go into those details now. So a little bit about red wine. Not good for the heart. Research changes, right? So the grapes that the red wine came from are fantastic. They have the resveratrol, and there's a little bit in red wine. But the Health Federation in January 2020 said that the evidence is clear. Any level of alcohol consumption can lead to loss of healthy life. Bring that up in the context of brain health, because it's incredibly important to have good frontal lobe function. All right. Another beverage that decreases frontal lobe function, you can tell me what this is. 30% of people have headaches. These are the 24-hour side effects. Anxiety. Caffeine. You guys are good. Wow. Irritability, tachycardia, heartburn, muscle soreness, increased fatigue in those percentages. Long-term side effects. And those are some things. Oh, sorry. Yep. Those are the 24-hour side effects and the percentages that people have those in. And then, so obviously, it's more than just coffee. There is some in green tea and chocolate in smaller amounts, as you can see there. And then the regular heavy use, so this would be like 4 cups or more per day. Regular heavy use, insomnia, like we talked about yesterday. Clinical anxiety, not just feeling more anxious, but actual clinical anxiety, depression, elevated cholesterol, irritable bowel syndrome, ulcers, and contributing to osteoporosis. Wow. So probably not the pick-me-up that you actually wanted. It blocks the adenosine receptors, which is the adenosine is like the fatigue. It tells you you're tired and you need to rest. And so it blocks that. So it's a delay of that fatigue feeling. So what happens, you know, so it's blocking the fatigue receptors. And so, oh, I don't feel fatigued. I feel better. But then what happens when the coffee is out of your system? You feel even more fatigued. So therefore, you need more coffee is the solution. No. Yeah, that is not the solution. You actually become more fatigued. People coming off of coffee, once they're past the withdrawal, they actually feel more energy and they feel better. Tyrosine is a amino acid that's a little bit of a pick-me-up. So watermelon and mustard greens are very high in tyrosine. And so if you need a little bit of kind of, I'm really tired, I need to stay awake right now, maybe some watermelon or tyrosine or water, or like maybe you're just dehydrated, maybe that's why you're tired, right? Or maybe you need a schedule and boundaries and say no to a few things. All right, some other things as well. So there is some types of frozen desserts that have caffeine in them. So just watch for that Ben and Jerry's. Anyway, some ice creams. So why all these processed foods that are high sugar, high fat, caffeine, why? Why all of this stuff? These are some very excellent books about the addictive properties in some of the processed foods that we eat in America. And that's why it's addictive. So a food addiction, a new diagnosis, but was really diagnosed in the Bible quite some time ago. Paul experienced this, all right, in Romans 7, that I really, really want to resist the donut. I know it's bad for me. I know it, but for I have a desire to do what is good, but I cannot carry it out. How many of us, you know, came to this seminar knowing that, you know, we should eat more fruits and vegetables, we need to exercise, we need to drink water, we need to get good sleep, all these things, but how many of us actually do it? That's where the challenge is, and that's what I pray that you will come away with today, of some practical ways to be able to do it in God's strength and actually apply what you've been learning this week and other things that you are going to learn from other sources as well. So that's the cycle. We've kind of already talked about the sugar addiction cycle, which is in your handout. It has to do with dopamine and serotonin release, that spike, and that feels good for the moment. It kind of relieves a little bit of stress, but then it crashes you afterwards, and so you feel those cravings, and you actually aren't hungry. You are hungry for some rest. You're hungry for a walk. You're hungry for something that's actually going to increase good circulation to your brain, increase your frontal lobe rather than decrease your frontal lobe. What happens with addiction? These, in simplistic terms, we're not going to go into the details, your pleasure hormones get imbalanced, the receptors, the number of receptors get imbalanced depending on what type of drug or food or substance that you are addicted to. So those are some of the different receptors and what are different neurotransmitters and what they do. They're little chemical messengers in your brain. And that it sends a message from one brain cell to another. We're going to look at that in a second. So what normally happens is that you see the candy dish at work. It, you know, comes through your eyes and your occipital lobe, and your emotions down here say, that would be really good. There's a birthday party today, and I want the cake that my coworker brought in. But then your frontal lobe says, you know, I'm gonna really think and evaluate this. Is this really gonna, you know, keep me, like, actually help my concentration this afternoon at work? I really have a big meeting. Like, is this gonna help me drop? I went to camp meeting and I said I don't wanna have sugar, these refined sugars, because I don't wanna have a crash afterwards. That's your frontal lobe kind of evaluating and thinking about it. And it can come back and actually block and override the emotional center if your frontal lobe is strong enough. If your frontal lobe isn't very as active, it's going to be very hard to resist what the emotions are saying. I feel like it. I just need this right now. And so the stronger that you resist that, the stronger that signal, the neurotransmitters are going to send back to the emotional center to not do it. So claiming God's promises, having a Bible promise on your refrigerator, eat for strength and not for pleasure, in Ecclesiastes, or saying something out loud, like, I don't need this right now, and saying that out loud strong, you know, or praying or whatever it takes. You're like, hey, you know, I can save this for later. I can have this for breakfast. and think about it a little while. I'm going to have some water instead right now. I'm going to go for a walk instead. So this is an example of addiction with nicotine going and stimulating the different nicotine receptors and the mesolimbic system, and then releasing a whole bunch of dopamine. So kind of an overstimulus of some of these different dopamine in this particular case. So with sugar, this was an interesting study. I think we're going to have to skip because of time. But basically, I'm saying that there is evidence that in excessive sugar use looks very, very, very similar to opioid addiction.
Wow.
It stimulates the same things in the brain. They're kind of very, very similar pathways. Actually, quite a few studies on that. We had a lady come through Renove a couple of years ago, last year, and she. We encourage like a 24-hour, one-day 24-hour water fast to kind of kickstart everything, and I ask them to tell me when they're doing it so that I can send them texts throughout the day and make sure they're doing okay and things like that. Well, she decided to do it, and she forgot to tell me, or for whatever reason, and she comes to the program the next day and is like, I think I'm quitting this program. I feel terrible. I'm shaky. I have a headache. I'm sweaty. Like, she's telling me all these like withdrawal symptoms. I was like, well, I know she wasn't like on any, you know, on any in particular drugs, you know, prescribed or otherwise. So I get asking her more details, and come to find out she had eaten like loads and loads of sugar for a really, really long time. And she was legitimately withdrawing from an excessive sugar addiction. And, you know, we walked through that, and, you know, the next day she was feeling better. The next day she was even feeling better, and she had so much energy, and she was sleeping, and she was like, why was I even doing that? Because, you know, her receptors and everything was starting to come back to normal. Now, sugar addiction is not exactly like an opioid addiction. Obviously, there's differences, but just this is to point out to say that it's stimulating, overstimulating the same part of the addictive part of the brain. And so this is actually very, you know, dangerous. So let me have you guess, this is a normal brain. And the red there is what would be like a normal level of dopamine, normal pleasure or interest in doing things. This brain, you can see that there's less, I don't know why this is, there's less, right? There's not very much red there. This person is not experiencing a lot of pleasure. This person, hardly at all, and they're even having a little atrophy. This person has a little bit of red. So there's, I believe there's cocaine addicted brain up here, sugar, kind of overweight, and I forget what the third one is.
Alcohol.
Maybe alcohol? Yeah, that's a good guess. Which one do you think this one is?
Sugar.
Okay, maybe some of you have seen this, I don't know. I actually don't remember which one is which. Oh, you guys are... All right, bummer. I should have not put it in the handout. I made you write it in. All right, so, oh, that was good. So cocaine down at the bottom, you've seen this before I did. Yeah, that's incredible. You are shutting down your frontal lobe and you're shutting down the pleasure hormones by the sugar addiction. I am going to skip the chart here for a moment. I think it's abundantly clear. So how do we change this? What happens, why do we keep going back to sugar? Because it becomes a habit. We keep feeling like that's the solution to our problems because that's how we felt last time, even though we know it's wrong. So what happens in the brain is something called neuroplasticity. So when the little dirt road behind your house starts to get used more and more because some businesses got built up, what do? They go and pave the road, and then they make it a two-lane road, and then they make, you know, ended up making it an interstate, and, you know, all the city pops up. That's exactly what happens in your brain. If you are going to the cupboard for a particular food over and over again right after you're stressed out, what are you gonna, you know, that part of your brain is gonna get more and more solid. It's gonna start, we call it automatic. automaticity. But can you do the opposite? Can you break down that highway in your brain?
Yes.
Definitely can. You can even build new brain cells. So this is before there's these pathways, but as you stop using that pathway, your body naturally breaks it down because it's not going to use that, or becomes a little more atrophied. So sometimes it's helpful to understand. It's not necessarily what, you know, sometimes it takes 60 days sometimes to build a new habit, sometimes longer, sometimes shorter. It really depends on how ingrained this habit is. That's encouraging. If you hang in there long enough, that it really can change. And so those are the neurons connecting to each other. And you know, maybe this is a dopamine one, and you need your dopamine receptors to get back down to normal. So that takes some time to do that. So forming new habits. We talked about Romans 7, the dilemma that Paul was having there in trying to, you know, I can't form a new habit. And that's important to recognize, that we cannot form, we can pull ourselves up by our bootstraps for a while, but for long-term success, who communicates with our frontal lobe? It's God. And so to really have a strong frontal lobe, we've got to have a power without outside of ourselves, God. Romans 8 is the solution to Romans 7. And specifically in our situation, what do we do to build new habits? Those who live according to the flesh have their minds set on the things of the fleshly desires. Just waiting for, you know, the next coffee. I'm just waiting for the next, donut. We have our minds set on what's in the fridge, or how miserable it is to go out and exercise. We have our minds set low and on ourselves. But instead, those who live in accordance with the Spirit have their minds set on what the Spirit desires. What if you were thinking about what the Spirit desires for you? Peace and hope and healing. Like, what would it look like if you were healed? What would it look like if you were, you know, had lost 20 pounds? Keeping your mind fixed on that is a lot more encouraging than all your failures. The mind governed by the flesh is death, but the mind governed by the Spirit is life and peace. God wants to, you know, we're seeking life and peace from kind of this wacky cycle of up and down and up and down. And when we're actually, you know, crashing ourselves quickly afterwards and kind of ruining our brains, when actually if we kept our minds on the things that God has given us and His natural remedies, exercise, got a good rest, got a good schedule, our mind could be governed, and have our mind focused on that, our mind could be governed with life and peace. So how do you change these things? You're stressed out, you don't know what to do, you're just so overwhelmed. First, think about your physical habits are very important when you're stressed out. Getting a good night's rest, getting hydrated, all the different things that these 10 hit categories are mostly lifestyle related. Sometimes it's easier when you're really stressed out, it's like, look, I'm just gonna go take a 10 minute walk. I'm just going to do something for my health. That will improve the mental health. The other side that I wanna spend the rest of our time on is our mental health habits, our thoughts. How negative or positive are they? Where are they focused? This also improves our physical health, but it our mental health. We talked yesterday about sleep hygiene, so today we're gonna talk about mental hygiene, how our thoughts are doing. One more thing about the physical health and ways to increase frontal lobe function is a contrast shower. Very easy to do. You can do this if you're starting to fight a cold or something like that, like we talked about on Tuesday, but we can also do this for when you are feeling stressed. 3 to 5 minutes hot, 30 seconds cold, 3 minutes hot, 3 cycles back and forth, and end in the cold. Try to get hotter and colder each cycle. Now, if you're diabetic, prone to low blood pressure, things like that, don't make it more than a 20 degree difference when you're going back and forth. You see some of the benefits there, aside from mental health. When Dr. Nedley was first starting his program, he had it for much longer, when he added the contrast bass that they do, he was able to shorten it to 10 days because of how effective and very interesting research that he has regarding the hydrotherapy and the brain. All right, so our thoughts. So this is a very interesting study of functional MRI where they can see blood flow function. And they had one group of people thinking the negative thoughts, and they had another group of people thinking positive thoughts. And this shows the connection between the frontal lobe and the area of the repetitive thinking, the automaticity areas in the brain. And they found that the more negative thinking that was happening, particularly in the area of automaticity in the brain, the negative thoughts there, the less frontal lobe function there was. So literally, if we have negative thinking, oh, I can never do this, oh, I always fail, like, oh, I'll never be healthy, I was like, oh, nobody can do that, then we'll actually be less able to make a good decision, less able to resist temptation. It's just like a self-fulfilling prophecy. How many times is like our own negative thoughts are self-fulfilling prophecy? Very interesting. Ellen White knew this quite some time back. Grief, anxiety, discontent, remorse, guilt, distrust all tend to break down the life forces, invite decay and death. Actually, grief and anxiety and these different things invite poor mental health. If you are struggling in any of these areas or have trauma in your life, get a hold of some good resources to work through this. Claim some Bible promises to these specific areas. Instead, speak courage and hope, faith, sympathy, love. Read things that have these stories that encourage these types of things that promote health and prolong life. How do we do that? We do that by fighting our cognitive distortions. And we're going to go very quickly through this, but it's very, very helpful. So these are different cognitive distortions, all or nothing thinking. They're listed in your handout. I'll never be able to stick with anything. Let's look at that one. I'll never be able to stick with anything. How can I correct that? That's not really true. You're here. You're sitting through this entire seminar. You can stick to it. You just proved it, right? You just proved this false. But I'll never be able to stick through anything. Instead, maybe more correct would be, I found it difficult to finish a few projects that I've started, and if I lose focus, I might do the same thing with my diet. You know, that's often something what people bring up to me, oh, I'll never succeed, right? And a promise, what promise can you claim? For a righteous man may fall 7 times and rise again, but the wicked shall fall with calamity. Why? Because they have hope that God can help them through that. So we're going to skip that. Very quick story about a lady. I asked permission to share this. Incredibly powerful. And I want you to be thinking as we share this story about what are you going to do differently after, during camp meeting or after camp meeting for your health personally. You can't sit through a seminar like this and not decide to do something different for your own health. So this particular lady, and at the very end, there's a question, what is God calling you to do for your health? Have you been convicted about something that, you know, I really need to get into a regular exercise routine? I really need to get into a regular devotions. I really need to work on negative thinking. Maybe there's something specific that God is calling you to. I know there is something specific God is calling you to, right? He's calling you to more faith, hope, and love in Him and more life and peace. So she really struggled with a sugar addiction. I mean, huge. She struggled with depression, anxiety, all kinds of different things. She's been hospitalized for those things. It just the whole. She struggled with weight all her life. When I first met her, she had all of the all or nothing thinking, and she's like, "Yeah, I don't think anything. You know, I really know that nothing is going to help me. I've tried so many times. I just can't stick with it. I feel like, you know, God's promises, they don't apply to me because, like, I don't, I'll always be heavy. This is just unfortunate. I don't think anything can help me. I'm just, you know, end up going to be, you know," she was suicidal at that point. It was very bad. So, you know, we started working together. She came through a number of different things, but she came to the Renove Health program. It was a couple weeks before Renove Health, and we were working together before that. And she started claiming God's promises. She was like, you know, I don't know, I don't think this is possible, but I'm just going to claim God's promises in regards to my sugar addiction. I'm not going to worry, you know, about it itself. I'm just going to claim God's promises. And she went to Burger King, got an Impossible Burger and some cookies. She had eaten the Impossible Burger, and she put her hand to reach up for the cookie, and she's like, I don't want this. She put the cookie down, was like, whoa, what just happened? Like, wow, praise the Lord. She walked by the candy dish a couple of days later. She put some candy in her pocket like she always does. And she was like, oh, no, that's not me anymore. I don't do this. That's not who I am. And so she went and put them back. And she has as long as she has strong devotions, is claiming God's promises, that's where her focus is. She does everything else, you know, to the best of her ability. Some days are harder than others, obviously. She hasn't touched that sugar since. She has to be very careful with her diet, that it's not very stimulating, and things like that, because she's had a sugar addiction all her life. When I asked her if I could share her story, she texted me back and said, yes, all explanation points. She wished she could be here. And then, and she said, hey, by the way, I've lost 40 pounds. Woo! That's coming from a person who could never lose any weight. So she just proved that cognitive distortion wrong. It's very exciting. Now she's a lot more like that, enjoying her healthy food. So that can be you in a particular area of life. I want to take just a moment. I mean, if you haven't written anything down, write something down of what God is calling you specifically to do for your health. Secondly, and what Bible promise you're going to claim, maybe you want to think about that afterwards. What is God specifically calling? If you do nothing from, you know, are you using the resources that are at hand? Are you cooperating with God? And are you, God can do amazing things if you are working to clear up your frontal lobe. And I was just reading of how the disciples, when they fell asleep on Transfiguration, that God, Christ was actually praying to give them something encouraging to make it through the cross experience. They fell asleep and completely missed that opportunity. How many of us are falling asleep because we're stressed out with our health and have bad health habits, and we're completely missing the opportunities God is giving us to encourage us to go through the different trials that are ahead of us at the end times or right now? Secondly, something to think about as we go home, in what ways can you personally and practically illustrate the gospel to those around you? What is God calling you to do specifically? I want to invite the head elder of the Cedar Lake Church, Steve Williams. He's housed some of our volunteers, and he has been very gracious in helping us out with our little experiment here at the church, because we've needed some extra help. I want to ask him to pray for our decisions that we have made, that next camp meeting, we will be seeing, those of you who want to lose weight, we'll be seeing less of you, right? And that those of you who want to exercise more will be seeing better frontal lobe function and brighter eyes and a cheerier face. Whatever decision you made, we want to consecrate that to God and ask him to give us the power to do that. Thank you so much.
To listen to more of these presentations, you may visit the audio archives at MISDA.org/audio2023 or search for Michigan Conference Camp Meeting wherever you get your podcast.